Previously on the Jay and Dan podcast.
Coming back in four cities only and having the players in a hotel where they'll be quarantined and have them wheeled out and there'll be no fans in the stands. But
wait, why are they being wheeled out?
That's a good question. I guess they could walk. Peter Schreger pointed it out last week on Twitter. No. Are you okay? What happened?
My microphone dropped.
You don't get Daryl Cates' kid coming up every year. You don't get the shout-outs to the fans back at Looney Goonies for the watch party.
Want to say hi to everyone at our watch party at Sammy's Margaritas and Martinis in Boca Raton.
How about the idea of going to wiffle ball or kickball style? Where pegging is allowed. You just throw the ball at the person, and if you hit them, they're out.
Another thing CJ mentioned, and I didn't want to interrupt his flow, but you know, when he talked about pegging means a whole other thing there.
You're listening to the Jay and Dan podcast, brought to you by our friends at McDonald's.
Dance. Dance.
It's the Jay and Dan podcast. So I could go for some yerba right now. And Jay, you weren't lying. You said last week when you went in to pick up some suits and shirts at the office, you took all the yerba home with you. Yeah, I confirmed that. It's not in the office anymore.
Well, because you made one trip there. And I made a trip there after you, and I figured that was the only trip. So I thought that yerba, I thought if we were going to be out for 2 years, that yerba was going to sit there for 2 years. And so I felt like I was doing a public service, but now I feel more like a hoarder, and I feel bad about it then.
I left all your yogurt and your turkey sandwich in the fridge, though.
Okay, well, I'm sure that'll be fine. They usually keep quite well. Dan, we're going to get right to our guest right off the top of the podcast because why wouldn't we switch things up, right? We're at home. Why would we do things a little bit differently? So Ariel Helwani, a UFC, ESPN UFC insider extraordinaire, good friend of ours, Montreal guy, great Canadian, worked with him back at Fox, amazing human being. That is who our guest is on the podcast today. And UFC 249 is coming up this Saturday. So who better to speak to than our guy, Ariel Helwani. There he is. How are you, my friend?
Hey, there
he is. How are you?
We're
great.
You
have a great setup down there. That looks like a real rumpus room.
A rumpus room. I'm not sure that I'm familiar with such a term, but it has. It is a spare bedroom that has now turned into my studio. All things ESPN MMA emanating from this location.
Yeah. And I'd how about your Expos? Your Expos hoodie is rad, man.
Oh yeah. Listen, I miss Canada dearly, but I've never missed Canada more than when I found out that my good friends over at TSN were replaying old Expos games. I mean, where are you at, Bell? Buy the team already. Bring them over, and let's get 162 live games on the network. Come on. And
you're preaching to the choir here.
We just need someone to organize it, though. They need to get these guys. Okay, I'll handle all the work. You guys just fund it. We just need someone to do that.
It would be great. I think it's going to happen. And let me tell you this. When it does happen, I'm moving back to Canada and I'm buying season tickets. I'm going to be the Donald Sutherland of the new Montreal. Remember back in the early 80s, Donald Sutherland was our Drake or our Spike Lee? Do you remember that?
Yes, I do remember that. That's so funny you say that because I had forgotten and then you said it. And I remember the images of him sitting in the stands, maybe wearing a nice pair of khakis and a jacket or something. Looking a bit rumpled, but happy, probably a few pops in. Ah, Donald Sutherland. That's right. Yeah, you could definitely be this generation's Donald Sutherland for the Expo.
Thank you.
Should we clarify, though, because Ariel said he didn't know what a rumpus room is. So a rumpus room, that's what you used to call like a rec room, by the way.
Ah, and who's this? Who would call this room this term?
I think it was like a second.
I don't know. Maybe it's a generational thing, Ariel. I don't know. Or maybe it's a Western Canadian thing. I love this kind of stuff, though, because now we can get to the bottom of this because our podcast listeners and followers will take that nugget of information and they will come back to us with where rumpus room comes from. And so we'll figure it all out. We'll get it all done. But you're in a spare bedroom there. So do you ever do so much work for ESPN that you just crash in the spare bedroom after working with our old buddy?
It's funny because a lot of people have been coming up. And can I just say, Dan's beard is tremendous right now. I mean, whatever you're doing over there, Dan, keep it up, my man. It's just fantastic. So well done. A lot of people have been saying to me, have you been catching up on this show? Have you been watching this show? Are you bored? Are you this? I got to tell you, MMA hasn't stopped. Like, yeah, there sure haven't been that many events, but you know, the UFC and Dana White have been trying. We thought one was going to happen April 18th, and then that got delayed or postponed, and now we have one coming up on May 9th. So I haven't had a break. In fact, dare I say, I feel like I'm working more now during this quote-unquote quarantine than, you know, I was working when things were normal. But luckily for me, my bedroom is right next door, so I could just, you know, when I get tired, I just go over there. And
So Ariel, this happens this weekend in Jacksonville. Do you see it 100% being pulled off, or are you in the mindset right now, okay, I'm going to see it, I'm going to believe it when I see it?
No, I think this one is going to happen. The big difference between this one and the one that they were trying to do on April 18th is that the one on April 18th was happening on a tribal land. The California State Athletic Commission was not regulating this event. It was happening in Lemoore, California, at a place called Tachi Palace, and they were kind of going rogue. They were kind of trying to do their own thing, and finally the government got involved. The governor of California got involved. ESPN and Disney got involved, and it became a big thing, and they told the UFC to stand down. This time around, it's happening in Jacksonville. The Florida State Athletic Commission is regulating it. There, the mayor is on board, and fighters have already started to check into the hotel. They've taken over a hotel in downtown Jacksonville. It's a real thing, and they're doing three events in the span of 7 days, this Saturday, then Wednesday, and then the following Saturday. So at this point, I would be surprised if it doesn't happen. Now, could something happen between now and Saturday where they test someone and he tests positive, and that could turn out to be a big issue? Yes, but I do think that we will get a UFC event on Saturday night.
Okay, Ariel, it's great, and I'm not surprised it's the state of Florida that is staging the UFC event, because they like to go rogue a little bit when it comes to the United States, the state of Florida. But how disappointed are you, because I know Dan and I are, how disappointed are you that Fight Island did not come to fruition?
Well, I wouldn't say be disappointed, like fully disappointed just yet, because they are still saying that it's going to be a thing. Dana White is adamant that this is going to be a thing. Now, I will say this. I've talked to a lot of managers and a lot of fighters, and in particular the international ones, because those are the ones who he said he was making this for. None of them have heard anything about this. Like, no one has been approached saying, hey, you know, get ready for June, you're going to go fight on an island. So right now it feels like promotion, if you will, and it certainly has captured the imagination and attention of a lot of people. But I haven't heard from a single person outside of what Dana White has said to the media over the past month or so that this is a real thing. I think right now they're focused on trying to pull off these events, and then they are crossing their fingers that Nevada will open its doors. And if that happens, that will be a huge coup for them, because they have an arena on their headquarters. Like, they have their own place. This would be very cheap for them to just do a ton of fights at this UFC Apex. So I don't know. I wouldn't hold my breath on the island right now.
So Ariel, lead us through this weekend. Has the UFC come out and said, okay, here's how many tests we're doing per fighter, here's when we're testing them, what is the process?
No, you know, they haven't, and they've been very vague about it all. Now, I've gotten emails that they've sent out to fighters and managers leading up to this event where they are saying, in the morning, you will be tested the next day, you will be tested on Saturday, etc. But one thing that gives me a little bit of pause is they're not exactly explaining what is being tested. What are you being tested for? What kind of test is it? Is it an antibody test? Is it the actual COVID-19 test? So to me, I really can't wait to see. Like, yeah, I'm excited for the fights on Saturday. Don't get me wrong, it's a great card. I can't wait to talk to the fighters on Friday and say, like, all right, so what has actually happened over there in Jacksonville? Like, what are they actually doing? Because they telling us, you don't need to know, or you'll find out later. And to me, like, this is the time where you have to be even more transparent than usual, right? And the UFC isn't known to be, you know, the most transparent organization on the planet. But, you know, like, I would feel a lot more comfortable about all this if they actually told us what was going on. Right now, they're not really telling us. But I have to say, all the fighters are down for it. I mean, they are all very excited to fight. It's a bit weird that the UFC is the only game in town. It makes me wonder why they feel like they should be, you know, above everyone else. But, you know, that's the UFC for you.
Yeah, well,
let's talk about that. Is it just Dana because you said it took Disney, it took Bob Iger himself probably placing a phone call to Dana to say, Dana, you can't hold this event right now. He's just relentless, right? He just refuses to let go. Is it all really just Dana pushing this through? He's the one who's allowing UFC to be the first one back. And give him credit, because he's going to get a ton of publicity just for the fact that the UFC is going to be the first big sport back.
Yeah, he's going to get a ton of publicity, but there's also a lot of pressure on his shoulders, right? There's a big bullseye right now. If this goes wrong, someone gets sick, and I'm obviously not hoping that happens, but man, could you imagine the repercussions? Could you imagine the blowback? You know, throughout all of this, yeah, they'll get a lot of publicity, but I'm reminded of the famous quote by the late, great Dennis Green, who after a very entertaining Monday Night Football game, when he was coaching the Arizona Cardinals, he went to the post-game press conference. So what did he say about the Chicago Bears? You guys remember what he said? They are who we thought they were, right? And I sort of feel like to the sports world, to the mainstream world, MMA/cage fighting is who we thought they were, right? People kind of expect this out of the fight game. They expect this out of promoters. This day and age, right now, in the state that we're all in, are they going to want to spend $65 pay-per-view card? Know about that. I think you're either an MMA fan or you're not. You're a degenerate gambler or you're not. But I don't know if you're someone who's actually going to go out of his way. You know, so it's going to be interesting to see how it all plays out, like what the actual week is going to look like in terms of the media coverage and whatnot. But yeah, Dana has taken this like a personal challenge, and it is ego. Part of it is money as well. You know, they stand to make a lot of money if they put on these events. But I think he likes the fact. I mean, who's one of his close friends? The man in the White House, right? And
yeah.
By the way, you mentioned Rumpus Room. It's a recreation room where a ruckus is made, but not a riot. So I looked up.
Oh. Okay.
Hey, Ariel, you mentioned that that Dennis Green quote. Yeah, we hear that quote in our sleep because it is in every top 10 that the Sports Center puts out. Top 10 Tiger Woods moments. It's in that. Top 10 hockey fights. It's in that.
It's a legendary quote, but I do feel like it's apropos for this particular story. Like, people expect this sort of thing out of promoters, right? And this is what I've always been drawn to when it comes to the fight game. The fight game is always a little different. Now, in a pandemic, do I feel like there needs to be fights? I don't know. I'm a little bit torn emotionally about it all and morally, but hey, here we are talking about them, so I guess it's a victory for them for now.
Well, and I guess the other thing, Ariel, is it's a good card, and especially if you're you and Dan and myself, and we used to work with Dominic Cruz at Fox. And we love the guy, and he's such a great story. And here he is coming back, and our friend, who's our UFC insider at TSN? His name is Aaron Bronstetter.
Aaron Bronstetter. I want you to clip that off and post it.
Aaron had a great line, though, because he said it's like an NFL quarterback tearing his ACL, then winning the Super Bowl, then tearing his ACL again, and then attempting to win another Super Bowl. Like, that's kind of what Dominic is being presented with here in his fight against Henry Cejudo. That's for the bantamweight title, right? Right.
Yes. Oh, it's unheard of. This guy, so in 2012, Dominic Cruz was 19-1. He was the bantamweight champion. He was one of the faces of the UFC. He was riding high, and he was filming a reality show called The Ultimate Fighter alongside his rival, Uriah Faber. Tears his ACL. And it's devastating. I remember talking to him 2 weeks later, and he was so upset and he was down. And, you know, ACL is very serious, especially for any kind of top-level athlete, a fighter. You got to move around so much, a wrestler, all that stuff. Comes all the way back from that and then tears his groin in December of that year. Sidelined again. Comes back from that and tears his other ACL. Sidelined again. I mean, it's just unbelievable what this guy's been through. And then he comes back after a 3-year hiatus, and then he has another year and a half hiatus, and then he comes back and he wins the belt, and then he goes on a nice little run, and then he loses in December of 2016, the last card that Ronda Rousey fought in, and that's the last time we've seen the guy. And amazingly, you know, since then, out almost 4 years, shoulder surgery as of late, and here he is fighting for the belt against one of the all-time greats, 2008 Olympic gold medalist. But I'll never forget one line. One of the greatest lines that a fighter has ever said to me came after he beat TJ Dillashaw in January of 2016. So he came all the way back from those surgeries. He beat TJ Dillashaw in Boston, Massachusetts. A great fight. And he said to me, I asked him, is this the greatest moment of your life? And what Dominic Cruz to me said to me is something that I'll always remember. He said, no, the greatest moment of my life is when I realized I didn't need a belt to be happy anymore. And I was like, man, that is profound, because now this guy doesn't need the belt to drive him. He doesn't need that pressure. And now here he is trying to get it again. It's a great story. It's a wonderful story.
I love the line. So Michael Bisping and Dominic, they would work with this on Fox all the time, analyzing fights. And I guess they would get on each other's nerve quite a bit. And Bisping said to him one night, "Keep it up, little man. Keep it up."
By the way, why do you guys keep talking about the Fox days? Is FS1 still even around? Is that even a channel? I mean, look at us now. Look at us. Who's laughing now, right, guys? Who's laughing now?
They're still around. I don't know if they're doing better than when we were there, but they're still around.
Sure
they're still
not.
Around.
Are you kidding me? Three Canadians leading the charge over there? I mean, come on.
Yeah, I don't think there are any Canadians left. Well, maybe there's someone. I don't know. It was a good time. But, okay, and then the main event, I guess you could say, because that was the co-main, the main event, you have Tony Ferguson and Justin Gaethje. And it was supposed to be Tony Ferguson and Khabib Nurmagomedov. But those two just cannot seem to get together and make a fight happen for some reason.
It's bizarre. Five times they've booked it now, and unfortunately, five times it has fallen through. The fourth time was the craziest. I don't know if you guys probably weren't there anymore. Tony Ferguson was doing media at Fox, at the Fox Sports lot where you worked for several years, and he tripped over a camera cord and tore his LCL. Does that happen? That is crazy. And he didn't sue them or anything. They're lucky about that. I mean, the guy lost millions of dollars 8 days before his fight. It was supposed to happen in Brooklyn. This was the card, by the way, where Connor showed up and threw the dolly, that infamous card. So then they book it for a fifth time, and they booked it back in December. And we were all joking, like, please don't announce this. Can you just, like, announce it the night before? Because this card is cursed. Like, what is going to happen now? The guy trips over a cord. One time a guy misses weight, all this stuff. And lo and behold, it's a pandemic that hits, and that's the reason why. I mean, I don't know if they're going to try to do it again. They say that if Tony wins this fight on Saturday, they will try to do it again in the fall. I'm afraid for humanity if they try to do it again, because it seems like when they try to put these two guys together. Remember when Hulk Hogan and Randy Savage were booked against each other? They said the mega powers explode. They're like
mega powers. Explode. Yes.
So they're kind of like our mega powers.
And Ariel, of course, on a fight card during a pandemic, you have to put Greg Hardy on that card, right?
Yes. Yes, you want to have good publicity, so you put Greg Hardy on the card. You know, Greg Hardy has really developed a nice, you know, I will say, like, a nice following and a reputation in this sport, where a lot of people aren't talking anymore about his past. And I have no issue if they want to talk about his past, but if you talk to the people who he trains with, he lives in a dorm at American Top Team in Coconut Creek, Florida, among, like, up-and-comers, like, a dorm, like, a real dorm. Like, this guy was, you know, NFL, Pro Bowler, Defensive Player of the Year, all that stuff, and now he's just living a very sort of, you know, lean life. And he's fighting a really tough guy in Jorgen De Castro. So he has done all the right things. He hasn't gotten any trouble. He hasn't really, you know, he's had some moments where it's been a little controversial here and there, but nothing, of course, like what he got into in the NFL. And he took a main event fight on very short notice in Russia against a tough guy named Alexander Volkov, lost that fight. This is his first fight back, so we'll see how he rebounds.
I just want to go back to the Ferguson Gaethje thing, because I feel like Gaethje comes in, he's the guy everyone wanted to come in. I didn't know much about him, to be honest, Ariel. I knew of him, but that Cowboy Cerrone fight was where I was really like, wow, this guy can really punch. Like, he can really hit people.
Oh, man. His nickname is The Highlight. I don't think it's a stretch to say he's one of the most exciting fighters in the UFC right now. I believe it's six fights that he has in the UFC and eight fight night bonuses off the top of my head. I mean, the guy produces. I will say right here now, I want you guys to ban me from ever talking to you ever again if this fight is boring. There is no chance that this is a bad fight. There is no chance that Tony Ferguson versus Justin Gaethje is a boring fight. Justin Gaethje has looked really good as of late. Now, the knock on him, like maybe 2-3 years ago, was he doesn't protect himself. He just throws caution to the wind. He doesn't fight smart. He takes three punches and then gives out four punches. He's not fighting like a guy who wants to have a long career.
But he's like Rocky.
Yes, but in his last few fights, he's changed his ways. He's gotten a lot more patient, a lot smarter, picks his shots, and has worked out really well for him. He's gotten, what, I think off the top of my head, it's 3-4 straight finishes in a row. So it has really produced a guy that we all thought was going to turn into this sort of fighter, you know, a strong puncher, a heavy hitter, a fast puncher, but a guy who is avoiding taking damage. And, you know, he was in talks to fight Conor McGregor on July 11th. He was on that kind of trajectory. Of course, this happened and it changed everything. But this is one of the best fighters in the UFC. And truly, you talk about Tony Ferguson, who's one of the more unique fighters, shall I say, in the UFC, and Justin Gaethje, who fights the way he fights. I really can't foresee, and no one's telling me to say this, I can't foresee any way this is a dud of a fight.
Well, you just sold some pay-per-views. Hey,
yes. Give me my cut, Dana. Yeah.
Can we get back to the elephant in the room, and that is the fact that this is being pulled off during a pandemic. Do you know of, or do you think, that anyone from the other pro leagues, like the NHL, the NBA, the NFL, is speaking with the UFC, making sure that this goes off without a hitch? Because if they screw it up, then they're all screwed.
Hmm. I thought you were going to refer to the painting of Jeff Reardon above my my left shoulder. I mean, how random is that, right?
Yeah, I love
the great
that.
Jeff Reardon. I know that Dana White is on a committee. He was put on this committee by the president, believe it or not, this task force, if you will, to try to get sports back up and running, to try to reopen the economy, Mark Cuban involved and others. I don't know if anyone is necessarily taking cues from the UFC, but I'm sure people will be watching. You know, obviously it's on ESPN, so you have a lot of executives watching it as well. But my sense is that the NBA, Major League Baseball, NHL, you know, they have their own plans and they're talking to each other as well. And the other thing you have to understand is the UFC is not a league per se. Dana White is an owner. So this would be the same thing as, you know, Jerry Jones just running his own quote unquote league and saying, hey, we're going to trot this thing out and we're going to keep going. He doesn't have to answer to anyone. He doesn't have to answer to a union. He doesn't have to answer to a fighters association. He doesn't have to answer to a board of governors. He doesn't have to answer to owners. He literally can do whatever he wants as long as he gets 24 fighters to sign up. So it's a lot easier for Dana White than it is for any of the other commissioners.
Dana White's dream was always to be on ESPN. When we were at Fox, we knew it. We all knew it. And now that he's achieved that dream, in your opinion, I know you work for ESPN, so you have to answer this in an interesting way, but I'm just going to ask you anyway, is it working out the way that Dana wanted it to?
Oh, 100%. This is the dream for him, and he is realizing it, and I think that you can honestly say, and, you know, I try to always be 100% honest with you guys. I'm removing myself from, you know, working for ESPN. You look at the past year plus, and the fact that SportsCenter is showing highlights as often as they are. ESPN.com is covering it as much as they are. You know, on the ticker, it's always there. The promos are there. I mean, I'm watching, you know, college basketball, and our own Dan Shulman and Jay Billis are talking about it. Coming up next, it's the UFC prelims. I'm watching the NBA, and the great Mike Breen and Jeff Van Gundy are talking about it. I mean, this never happened in the past, right? And it's kind of like one of those things where by osmosis, you start to grow up a little bit. And so I know that the UFC is thrilled. I know that ESPN is thrilled. And it's honestly still a little bit surreal to see these two, you know, companies together, because for the longest time, it always felt like Dana White was the guy at the bar sitting next to his wife, Fox, and down at the end of the bar was the pretty blonde ESPN that he really wanted to be with, if you get what I'm saying. And now he's there. Now he figured it out. So, yeah, my understanding is he is absolutely thrilled. And, you know, if you're trying to maybe wonder whether or not he was upset that he had to, quote unquote, stand down, I don't think he was. I mean, look, here he is literally 2 weeks later back up and running. So it wasn't a huge blow to him.
Ariel, how's the pandemic been for you? You're still putting out 47 hours of content a week.
Can't stop, won't stop, as the great P. Diddy once said. No, it's been great. Honestly, you know, it's funny. The beginning of the year, like January through March, I was traveling. I think I traveled 8 out of the first 10 weekends of 2020 because, and I'm not complaining, trust me, but I got to do some NBA sideline gigs, and this is an absolute dream for me.
Yeah.
I mean, just unbelievable. I love the NBA, and I mean, I'm interviewing Kawhi and Chris Paul. It was just surreal.
Wait, Ariel, how did that come about? Like, were you the squeaky wheel who got the grease to just, hey, let me do this? Or like, how did it come about?
So I got to ESPN June of 2018, September of 2018. So I waited 3 months. I found out who's the EP, the executive producer of the NBA coverage, sent him an email and said, hey, I'd love to talk to you for a few minutes. I don't know if you know who I am. Come to find out he didn't. but hey, are you available? Yeah. He said, yes, sure. Go to his office. I say, hey, you know, nice to meet you. Hope you're well. Don't want to waste your time. I know you're very busy. I just want to let you know that I adore the National Basketball Association. And my dream is to cover the NBA. And I've always wanted to be a sideline guy. I don't want to be your play-by-play guy. I don't want to take anyone's spot. But if you ever need someone, if anyone's ever sick, if you're ever in a pinch, please do consider me. And he said, look, I've been here a long time. No one has ever come in and been this blunt before. I appreciate it. I like your style. Unfortunately, we don't have anything available right now. No openings. I said, that's cool. I'll be here hopefully for a while. You know, hopefully something works out. A few months later, calls me up and says, hey, we're doing some summer league games, of course. Would you like to do sidelines for summer league? I said, absolutely. In fact, the UFC was going to be in town for their big July 4th weekend show. It worked out perfectly. My first game, who's the color analyst? Vince freaking Carter. It was unbelievable. I'm sitting there so nervous, and it's me, Vince Carter, and George Sedano. So I get to do three games in July. I don't hear anything back. Nothing. I heard nothing. I don't know if they hated me or loved me. I'm like, all right, that was fun. I got a cool little polo with NBA Summer League on it. I got to realize the dream. Early October, I'm sitting in this room on my computer. I get an email from one of the production coordinators and say, hey, Ariel, hope you're doing well. These are your first two games of the regular season. Zion Williamson's home opener against the Dallas Mavericks on October 25th, I think it was, which, and then I look at who are the broadcasters for that? Mike Breen and Jeff Van Gundy, like two of my favorites, my favorite NBA coach of all time and one of my favorite NBA play-by-play guys of all time, and me. It's Breen, Van Gundy, and Helwani. What the heck? Second game, Christmas Day, Raptors-Celtics, first Christmas Day game in Canada, my home country. And so I got to do five games in total, and it was unbelievable. The way they all accepted me, they could have said, who's this fighting guy? Who's this MMA guy coming here? Everyone was so nice, so cool. And what I came to find out was, there's a lot of MMA fans in the NBA. A lot of people wanted to come and talk to me about Conor and Khabib and all this stuff. And so I really hope that I get to do that. I don't know how we got on the NBA topic, but it's been an amazing ride.
Oh, by the way, aspiring broadcasters should, well, we've gone over your story, how you became what you are in the UFC. They should just read how you got to where you are and just do that, because your perseverance and determination and hard work, it's something to admire, to be admired.
Thank you. And you know, the one thing I'll just say is I kind of feel like we only have one life, and you might as well just go for it. And, you know, like you guys, Canadians, we don't get a lot of opportunities, right, in the States, and you guys went for it and you're doing so well. And I'm very proud to know you, and you might as well just go for it, right? And I feel like, hey, Montreal kid makes it to ESPN. I'll be damned if I'm just going to sit here and just kind of like ride it out. I might as well go for it, and we'll see what happens.
Well, and if you hadn't, you know, it's amazing. The most amazing thing about that story is your executive vice president or your executive producer saying, no one's ever done that before. Like, that blows my mind that no one ever thought to just talk to an executive producer and say, I want to do this. And the fact that you did that was why you ended up doing it, right? If you hadn't said something, it's not like he would have picked you out of a lineup and said, you know what, I actually think that MMA guy would be pretty good on the sidelines. Like, you have to make that move, right? You have to do it.
Yeah, and I give a lot of credit to the culture at ESPN, because it could be a little daunting when you get there. It's this massive place, and it's intimidating. You see all these famous people. But what I learned early on, I don't know if you guys ever read the books Choose Your Adventure when you were kids, like,
oh, yeah.
Hey,
yeah.
Go to page 56 if you want to cross the bridge. I learned early on that it's kind of like choose your adventure over there. You can really, you know, determine what path you go down. So just because I was hired as an MMA guy, and don't get me wrong, I don't want to leave MMA. I'm not ungrateful towards MMA, but why can't I be the MMA / NBA / whatever else guy as well? And if it all fits into the schedule, why can't I do it? And so it's been really great, and I appreciate them allowing me to do that. But to answer the initial question, the pandemic, obviously it's uncertain, and I'm an anxious guy, and I miss my parents, and they live in Montreal, and I miss, you know, the idea, like, we were supposed to go home for Passover, Jewish holiday, and all that stuff, but we couldn't. But I got to tell you, the bonding that I've been able to do with my my three children in particular, you know, getting to go outside with them now and play basketball and things like that. I mean, I try every night to, like, take a step back and say, yeah, homeschooling is tough, and, you know, I don't get the same sort of luxuries as I did in the past, but, like, that bonding time with my wife and three kids has really, really been special. And I hope that when this is all said and done, and hopefully we're all safe and healthy, that we can look back on those moments that we probably weren't going to get and say, hey, maybe there were some positives that came out of this.
Couldn't agree more.
Jay, you mentioned last week that this is new for Jay and I, being home with our families at night, something that we haven't done in, well, what?
20 years.
We've been doing this for 20 years.
Yeah, we're just never home with our, like, even my wife, like, I'm home with my wife at night during the week now, and we look at each other like, this is where this must be what normal couples do. They're just home at night together. Like, it's fantastic. Now, how old are your kids now, Ariel?
8, 6, and 3.
So, this is a question, a debate we've been having. Dan's kids are a little bit older, and my kids are a little bit younger than your kids. Who do you think is better off? The parents with the kids who are a little older, who can have a little bit of their time on their own? You can say, hey, guys, just go off on your own for a while. But then you got to school them, and you got to take that schooling seriously, right?
Right.
Am I better off with the little kids that it's never a break? It's relentless for the entire time they're awake. But the schooling, you can kind of, you know, it's not as quite as serious. Who's better off in that situation?
Okay, so this is a fascinating question. So for the younger ones, they don't really understand what's going on, right? They just think this is fun. The older ones, while they can be self-sufficient, they obviously understand what's going on. And it's so funny that you bring this up, because I left my house for the first time last week since March 12th. Like, I took this lockdown serious. I went nowhere. I mean, I went outside and stuff like that, but I didn't go in my car or anything. And then last week, my brother, his daughter celebrated her birthday. So we went to go do one of those drive-by things. And he has two kids in the 6th grade and 4th grade. And what I saw was a totally different situation than the situation that I have, where I have a second grader and a kindergartner, because he literally tells his boys to go up to the room, and between 9 and 4, they do homework. And he doesn't have to, like, hold them by the hand. I can't do that with my kids right now. So we have to, like, literally sit down and say, okay, let's go to page whatever and do math. And I find that really tough while we're also trying to do our jobs. My wife works as well. But then I have a 3-year-old who's completely dependent on all of us. So basically what I'm trying to say is, it's absolute madness in here every single day. And I can't believe that I'm able to pull off anything. But again, I've been loving it, and also been showing my kids. Like, I went through this whole phase where I showed them old wrestling matches on the WWE Network. And that was tremendous. And my middle son is really into it. I've been showing them the Last Dance documentary series, Michael Jordan, teaching them about that. Things that maybe I wouldn't have had the opportunity to do. So I came to the realization, two things I realized at the beginning of this. Number one, I had to stop watching the news because it was truly making me depressed. It was just very overwhelming. So I just tried to block it out. I don't know if that's smart, but I did. And number two, you know what? If you don't get through the math homework today or the coloring homework for the young ones, it's not the end of the world. It's okay. Right. We'll all be okay. Let's just try to have a good day.
Yeah, I read a tweet message that at the start of this, I read on this actual podcast, where a teacher reached out to someone and said, you should know that at the end of this, they should remember it as being fun, not, oh, it was living hell. So just remember that if you're homeschooled. That's what I do. I'm like, guys, it's 1 o'clock on Friday. School's out. School's out. Yeah.
I don't know, Dan. I don't know if you're the best barometer that we should be.
No, someone sent me a great quote. Off the top of my head, I believe it was, if you want to have a great day, you can either do math homework today, or you could go play outside with your kids. The great day won't come by doing both. You have to pick one. You either go outside or you do the math homework. And most likely, you know, the great day is going to come from, you know, going outside and playing with them. Now, I understand if you're in the 7th grade or 8th grade or 9th grade, it's a little different. But right now in our situation, I kind of feel like, hey, if they don't do the math homework, it'll be okay.
For my kids' teachers. Well, my oldest, she's on the Zoom call, like, just staring into the space. I'm like, is this what the teacher has to deal with you? Like, what is going on here?
I know.
Yeah, you learn a little bit more about your kids, for sure, I think. Though, absolutely. You know, being on a Zoom call with, you know, like, my kids in kindergarten too, Ariel, and, like, she's on a Zoom call every Friday with 5 of her classmates. They don't know what to do on a Zoom call. They just stare at each other, right? Because they don't really know how to communicate that way yet, right? Like, they're just sort of looking at each other, and you have to prompt them, and they're all super shy. And so my daughter wore a Wonder Woman costume last time to kind of break the ice, and it seemed to work well. But but other than that, it's tough. I think it's tough for the little kids on these Zoom calls, and it seems kind of pointless to me, maybe.
Yeah, and they don't really understand why can't I play with my friends? Why can't I do that? And you know, their teacher, at least ours, are a little older, so they're a little, you know, uncertain with how to actually pull this off, right? It's a little strange. But my son actually had his 8th birthday last Thursday, and I'm the kind of parent who likes to make a big deal out of the birthdays, and I was a little bit nervous that it wouldn't live up to previous standards, so to speak. And we actually made the best of it and ended up being a really, really great time. And one of the things that we did was we invited some of his friends to do a Zoom call. And what he did was he read them Pokemon trivia, and they all got really into it. Like, he would read them and they had to raise their hand, and it lasted an hour and they had a blast. And so, nice. you know, you kind of have to get a little bit creative, and hopefully this doesn't last forever. But, you know, again, like, it's moments like that. At the end of the night, I went to bed and I was like, you know what, that was really great. You know, sometimes you do these big parties and you don't get to talk to anyone and you don't get to really, like, bond with your kids. And I really love being with my kids and, you know, seeing them grow up. So I've enjoyed these moments in the midst of all this uncertainty and anxiety.
I agree with you. I feel I'm embarrassed sometimes because this whole process has been really great for us. We were home with our kids. I'm home at night. Still doing the podcast. I get to talk to you, Ariel. This is so much fun. And then I know lots of other people in our industry who aren't working at all. And it just, I feel guilty about it, that I'm enjoying this process somehow. Obviously, there's so much going on outside of it that's so tough. People dying, hospitals and all that. But frontline workers working so hard. But yeah, I feel guilt all the time anyway. But I feel excessive guilt about the fact that I'm actually getting something out of this that's positive, I guess.
Yeah, and you know, there is a lesson, as Dan was saying earlier, I think there is a lesson for aspiring broadcasters that you need to be crafty. You need to have other things. You can't just have one thing, right? It's important to try to, and not everyone can pull it off, but you know, you have the podcast, be able to do interviews, be able to adapt. It's funny, when I started my journalism career, it was in my New York City apartment. My future wife and I lived in a 550 square foot apartment on the Upper East Side. And I would write to fighters via MySpace. This is back in 2006 when MySpace was the social media site du jour. And I would write to Chuck Liddell and Tito Ortiz, will you do an interview with me? And I'm literally sitting at the same table right now, the same tiny glass table that I put in this makeshift studio that I was back in 2006 doing those interviews. And now here I am 14 years later, kind of realizing the dream of working at ESPN, but I sort of feel like I'm doing the same thing that I did back then. And I feel like I was prepared for it all because of how I started my career. So with the times, you have to be able to adapt and okay, there are no live games. All right, what am I going to do? How am I going to be valuable for my company? You have to think on your feet. And, you know, during these times, I think that's really important as well.
100%. Well, my friend, this has been incredible. I'm going to let you get back to, you got to create a sign for the Rumpus Room now. I feel like if you don't call that the Rumpus Room, it's like a missed opportunity.
What I'd like to know is, why did like Dan sort of bow out of the conversation over the last 10 minutes? Like, it just seemed like you took the baton and led the way. Was I boring him? Was it?
No.
I think that's just Dan.
No, because I could tell Jay, we kept you for so long. I thought Jay was going to sign off. So I was letting him, because I didn't know if he had to let you go. Because I didn't know what your time commitment was.
No, listen, I got all day. Can I ask you guys one last question? Favorite Montreal Expos memory? Can you give me a nice memory? Give me something. What do you remember from the glory days? I mean, you guys are older than me, right?
For me, like, when I was a little kid, the most amazing thing about, and I've never really talked about this before, my upbringing in small town Alberta, there were two teams I focused on. It's incredible. So I'm living an hour north of Edmonton. Obviously, the Oilers in the early 80s. That's when I grew up, in the early 80s, and the Oilers were incredible. So you're a little kid in your mind, you're thinking, well, I guess we have the greatest team ever, and we're always going to have these players. We're always going to have Gretzky and Messi. We're always going to have them. So that was just like normal. And then the other favorite team was the Montreal Expos, 100%.
Yes.
So, right? Like, it was just, they were such a cool team. And the Jays became cool later, but the Expos were way, way cooler to a little kid at that time. And it's Carter, and it's Wallach, and it's Dawson, and it's Reigns, and it's all those guys, and it's Reardon. But those memories are so vivid for me, watching those guys on my little 4x3 TV, very fuzzy reception, questionable to even see the pitches themselves. But it's not a specific memory for me. It's just the fact that as a kid, they were, and I'm like cheering for the Oilers, and the Oilers are in my backyard, and the Expos at the time were just as cool to me.
I grew up a Jays fan, 85 Jays, best Jays team of all time because it had Garth Orange on that team. My favorite thing about watching the Expos growing up was Vladdy Guerrero. Vladdy Guerrero, it seemed, could play in any era of baseball because if a pitch bounced on the way to the plate, he would hit it. It just, his raw athleticism, that was my favorite part of the Expos.
Oh, yeah. During this time, it's been nice to be nostalgic and look at old clips. Thank God for YouTube. But that's why I was excited when I saw that TSN was airing those old games. And there's so many ones I don't know if you guys remember the Curtis Pride Friday night against the Phillies. Remember Curtis Pride? He was deaf and he hits a double Friday night. They're in the pennant race with the Phillies. And there's 55,000 people at the Big O. People said that Montreal wasn't a baseball town. Are you kidding me? And the umpire had to tell him to tip his cap because he couldn't hear. I mean, I get goosebumps thinking about these moments. Cliff Floyd against the Braves hitting the home run off of Greg Maddux. Remember that?
Cliff Floyd. Yeah.
Oh, God. So anyway, I like to be nostalgic. I love my team and they will come back one day. And I hope that Toronto fans recognize that would be good for both of us, right? If we get a Toronto-Montreal rivalry, it would be phenomenal. Yeah,
it would be just as it's great in hockey, it would be incredible in baseball again. And you said it for a company like Dan and I always joke, but realistically, when you're talking about content, to have 162 games, Bell, you got to step up.
Come on, Bell.
We're bringing it back. We're bringing it full circle now. We're bringing it back to where this interview started. Bell has to step up because it really would be unbelievable. I mean, the only hurdle to me is I wish they had got that downtown stadium built and it would just
That's the key.
This whole time. But you know, then they might have to build another one now anyway. So, yeah, if they can get a stadium built, I'm so with you, Ariel. It would just be incredible for sports in Canada, no question.
Amen. Guys,
my friend,
it's been a pleasure.
It's been awesome, buddy.
Great chat.
Yeah, and hope you and your family stay safe. All the best to your entire family and your folks in Montreal. Hope they're staying safe too. And thank you. We just love talking to you. We just think you're the best.
Anytime. Thank you very much, and the same to you and your families. And yes, anytime you guys want me. I love how you reach out to me. It's like Jay Onright has sent you a DM, and you're like, "Do you have time for us?" I'm like, "Are you kidding me? Do I have time for you?" Hey, I make time for Jay and Dan.
Two final questions.
Yes.
This must be the longest you haven't been on a flight in forever. And,
oh my God! Yes.
And you will not be going to Jacksonville because no media, right?
There will be limited media, but no, I will not be going there. And you know what? I don't mind. I'm happy to be watching it from here with my family. I'm okay with that. Our little secret.
Yeah. Okay. See you, buddy.
Thanks, Ariel.
Thanks, guys. Take care.
Take care.
What I got?
What a gem.
Hang on. I got to take some pies out of the oven.
All right. And so there you go. Papa. Stop. How you doing? How you liking hanging out by the Orono welcome sign?
It's nice. It's a little wet.
University of Maine?
Yeah.
That's where Orono, or the University of Maine is in Orono, Maine?
Yep. I guess so. Huh.
That's interesting.
I didn't know that either. Until this day.
So, Toolsy, a couple of things we got to talk about. Number one, you were at my house on Saturday and you ate an entire meal on my porch. You need to explain.
Yeah, that's
explain.
Right. Well, we want to confirm with everyone. We were at social distance. Jay let me eat on his stoop with my lady friend because we had to go pick up some stuff from your house. And we went to one of my favorite restaurants in Toronto. It's called Alouette. They were available for takeout. And Patrick, the head chef, said, "Hey, text me when you're coming down. I'll arrange it." So he had the restaurant call me, and I ordered, I think, everything on the menu.
Men feed my mouth.
And I had a very light breakfast, so that ensured I wanted an early dinner. So I picked it up for dinner at 3 p.m., raced to your house, and then I proceeded to devour food at an ungodly pace.
Like, if you've never eaten a meal with Dan, and most of you haven't, like, it's as if there's going to be zombies are encroaching on Dan, and he needs to get this food consumed before the zombies get to him and the food. It's quite something. It's really
something. I don't know. It was a first time experience for me because it was, because I always go places. We always are like in Detroit or Pittsburgh or go to Trump. So we haven't done anything like that in forever. So in the week leading up to it, we had planned it that we would pick up food there. So on the Saturday morning, I woke up and I couldn't stop staring at the menu. I looked at the menu for like, and now I'm like, I got to eat it right now. And so decided to have a 3 p.m. dinner.
Your lady friend was not as into the concept of eating at 3, but once you started eating all the food, I thought maybe she thought one of two things. Well, maybe this isn't such a bad idea, or if I don't get a few bites in, this is going to be gone.
So brought you a piece of lemon meringue pie, best lemon meringue I've ever had in my life.
Yeah, everything there, if you're in, you know, if life returns to normal, or if you're just in Toronto and you want to do the takeout thing, I can't recommend all of his restaurants enough. They're excellent. But the other thing I wanted to talk to you about, Dan, was
so you hear like the name of this restaurant and you always think, oh, it's a high-end restaurant. Prices are going to be crazy. It's the same price as going out to like Milestones or something.
Yeah, Alouette specifically. Yeah, that place is their casual restaurant, and it's like they do casual food better than anybody. Yeah, it's just fantastic food. I couldn't agree more. And yeah, they're really kicking butt on the takeout thing. But what I did want to mention is we were talking about, you know, the Zoom calls with the classes and his, you know, his son's friends, and we had a Zoom call with our old Fox Sports Live pals from FS1 that was sort of arranged by producer Tim. And it was wonderful just to see everybody, and everyone looks great and everyone's doing great. But man, there were too many people on that Zoom call. Like there were like 30 people on that call. I felt bad because the host of the show, so a lot of the focus was on us and asking us questions, and we were involved in the call. There had to have been 20 of the 30 people on that call who didn't say a single word the entire time. And I felt so awkward and bad about it.
Well, the one, Cam, hopefully he's listening to this. I said, Cam, I haven't heard from you. He's like, well, last one of these, I sat on it. No one asked me a single thing.
Yeah, it's like anything. You got to be involved. You got to make an effort, right?
Yeah.
But it's, I feel like what's a good, so I guess my question relating to this is, what's a good limit to the amount of people that should be, and I'll throw that out to you too, Staff, the amount of people who should be on a Zoom call, you know, if you're getting a few friends together or whatever, because 30 was just too many. And I was trying to figure out, you know, I thought about it later that night. I'm like, what would have been a good number? And I kind of think like 10 is like a max.
I would even say like five or six max.
I mean, that's great because then you're really focused on everybody. But I feel like with 10, you can check out a little bit for, you know, you can just listen if you want, but you're not, it's not like you're lost, right? You can still see everybody. Whereas with the 30, it's like, okay, who's up in the top corner there again? Oh yeah, right. Okay, I better ask that person a question because I don't know if they're dead or not.
There was a few people on that. I'm like, I've never seen them before in my life.
Well, you probably had, but you.
Yeah, it was interesting. And I got to Irish exit from that call because my computer locked up and I'm like, that's my cue.
Okay, so this is the other thing. You were brilliant because, again, we're on it for, you know, 40, you know, half an hour, let's say. And at that point, I was like, okay, I kind of caught up with everyone. I feel like I could exit now. I didn't get off that thing for another hour after that. There's no natural way to get off of a Zoom call. Like it's hard somehow. I don't know why, because the conversation is flowing and it's not, there's no awkwardness with 30 people. There's always people talking. So I just couldn't, I kept going like,
but you just pointed out the perfect way to get out. There's 30 people. So you just turn your thing off.
Yeah.
And walk away.
I could have done that, but then I would have felt guilty. Like I would have felt like people would have been upset that I didn't say goodbye or something. Whereas you were brilliant. Your computer just shuts down. You're out of there.
Actually,
you were gone.
Actually. Can you put it on? Can you put it on my tombstone? He never said goodbye.
It was great. It was great. I enjoyed it. But So now I'm thinking maybe we need to do a Zoom call with like the Jay and Dan staff, the Sports Center with Jay and Dan, brought to you by McDonald's staff. Maybe get everybody together. Producer Tim's there. Andrew Zwarich, cameraman Glenn can come back and do it.
He does not have a phone or a computer, so I don't know.
That's a good point. Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah.
So
no phone. Yeah, the no phone thing is interesting. We talk about our friend Jim Pearl a lot in LA, and on that Zoom call, we were talking about Jim Pearl. Now, he wasn't on the Zoom call because he doesn't have a cell phone either. You talked about how you talk to him on the phone all the time, and I said, I actually said at one point, Jim Pearl and I email each other three times a day, and that's no exaggeration. Like, we'll send emails to each other three times a day. And I think everyone on the call, because they're all like 15 years younger than us, was like, email? Like, still, like, why wouldn't you just text? So they thought that was odd and made us sound old. But, I like the Zoom thing. I think it's fun, actually. It's kind of like, it's like, I was anti-Zoom at the beginning of this pandemic, and now I'm pro-Zoom. Other than them having all my information, I think it's very positive.
If I'm not mistaken, I believe my friends in high school called Magic Mushroom Zoomers.
Oh, At Mount Zoomer was a album by Wolf Parade, a great Canadian band. And I believe it was about being on mushrooms. I think that was a reference to mushrooms. Stoff, what do you think of the whole Zoom phenomenon?
It's pretty good. It's fun catching up with people. But a couple of weeks ago, I was on a call that had like 20-something people in on it. And you have no idea who's there and who isn't after a while because you can only see so many on the screen. So I would probably top it at 8 in terms of how many people you want on there. That way you can kind of keep track and whatnot. And the key to leaving is always just pretend there's something going on off screen and then just turn to the screen and go, gotta go.
Right. Problem is, I was in my garage, so it was hard to...
I just looked up Zoomer, and yes, remember Zoomer the magazine? I don't know if they still put it out, but it was always at the airport.
Zoomer is, I believe the publisher of that magazine is former Dan's former boss and City TV brain trust Moses Neimer. I believe he is the man who came up with that concept, yeah.
It's a magazine for old people, if people don't know.
It's a magazine for the boomers. It's Zoomer for the boomers. That's what it's for. They should have just called it OK Zoomer.
Since we were watching so much on Crave and Netflix and everything, I tweeted this out the other day after I watched it. Good Boys. Watch that movie. It's on Crave. It's a Seth Rogen-produced comedy. I went in with zero expectations. I tee-heed at least 15 to 20 times.
Yeah, I haven't seen it, but I remember when it came out, there was a lot of expectation that it was going to do really well because I think the buzz was good about it. I think the advanced screenings had done really well, and the concept was funny, but it did very poorly in the theaters, and so I kind of forgot about it until you brought it up the other day, and I thought, yeah, I'd like to see that. That sounds pretty funny. Seems like the Goonies with like a lot of swearing, basically.
Yeah, it's three kids getting into crazy circumstances.
Just imagine if the three of us had known each other at that age, all the wacky hijinks we would have gotten into.
Zoomers.
All right, boys, I gotta go. I gotta pee.
This has been fun.
Oh, no. Oh, chaos in the rumpus room.
Save us.
You're listening to the Jay and Dan Podcast, brought to you by our friends at McDonald's. James Duffy presents the Rubber Boots Podcast.
So we're sitting down at our table. The waiter comes up, and he's like profusely sweating. And this is like 100% his first line to us. He goes, "Hello, I am not well. I'm very ill."
You ate there?
I came down with it yesterday. I've just not been good. Not good at all.
Get it at tsn.ca and anywhere you get your podcasts.